started out as a typical day in corporate America, and Craig was giving another PowerPoint presentation. Nothing different from what he had been doing for 25 years in management. Suddenly, in the middle of the talk, Craig felt weak, almost as though he had the flu, and he no longer cared about what he was presenting. He went home early. The next morning, he felt better, so he drove to work as usual, but he only got as far as the company parking lot. He just couldn't force himself to get out of the car and walk into the building. Despite having made it, as far as society was concerned, Craig decided that he would never go back to just a job that was empty and without meaning. The past 8 years have included lots of turmoil and many sacrifices, but Craig is now happily living his authentic life. Headquartered in Petaluma, California, Craig is the vocational coach. Craig is a speaker, author, college lecturer, but he's also a coach in private practice, working with people over 40 throughout the U.S., helping them discover how to do what they love. Craig combines his corporate experience, his own journey, and 13 years of doctoral research and teaching to help others live more fulfilling lives. Craig believes the world would be a better place if we all did the work we love. Craig's latest book, Don't Just Retire and Die, A New Approach to Your Life and Work Over 40. This book is Craig's latest contribution to helping people in midlife survive and thrive in this challenging economy and find more meaning in their lives through their work. Craig has presented his work in Canada, Russia, and throughout the U.S. He has appeared on various radio shows and contributed to many publications. Craig is here today to help us get our hearts and minds thinking in a new way and to give each of us many ideas for discovering and doing what we love on the way towards a more authentic life. Help me welcome Craig Nathanson.
Thank you so much, John. Very, very, very much. It's my pleasure to be here with you as I get dressed for work here. You know, this is for sure a difficult economy. People are out of work, or people who are working are concerned that, you know, they might be next. But it's also, I think, a perfect time, especially for those of us over 40. And there's a few of you that might not qualify today, but just ask your neighbor, and they'll keep you abreast as we go through the information today. After 40 is really a perfect time to start to think about what work must emerge through you. You know, the concept of a job is helpful and useful, right, before 40. We need a job to build ego. We need a job to build self-esteem. If we go to a party and somebody says, so, Craig, what do? You know, I say, I'm an accountant. We say, okay, I understand. But after 40, it's really important to put ego aside and really, really be humble and think about what work must emerge through me. And so I think the economic crisis that I write and talk about that we're having now, this is a perfect time to start to ask yourself, what can I do to reshape the second half of my life towards more significance, more coherence? Coherence is an important word. What does the word coherence mean? It means, what work can I do that makes sense to me? So in the next hour or so, I'm going to give you some ideas, and we're going to have some discussions to help you walk out of here. I make a promise that you're going to go out tonight with some ideas on how to make more joy, more fulfillment out of your work and your life. And I think it's focused around your work. So let's get started. I developed a model about 10 years ago, and it's really Maslow's model, Maslow's hierarchy of needs in reverse for people over 40. I'm going to go through it tonight and tell you some stories, and we're going to share. But this is really a workshop for each of you to start to think about how you, starting now, could reshape the rest of your life for more joy and more fulfillment around your work. It all starts at the top of the pyramid, as I developed, with purpose. You know, what is the purpose of your life? If you had to answer the question, you know, the purpose of my life is, what would you say? Now, that's a very esoteric question. I mean, if someone asked me that years ago, I would like, I don't know. I don't know what that means. But I think it's the most important question to ask. Now, that's a difficult question. Most people will never, ever figure out their purpose. You know, an authentic life is a very lonely road. So how do you figure out your purpose? Start with, ask yourself, where do you want to make a contribution in the world? Where do you want to make a contribution? Think about what problems, you know, bother you in the world, in your neighborhood, on your block, where you want to make a contribution. It could be anything. Again, there's no one's judging you. We all can't be Mother Teresa helping the poor of India. It could be as simple as just wanting to help kids read in your neighborhood or plant more flowers. It doesn't matter. You're never too old, never too early. I was at a Chinese place for lunch a few weeks ago, and there was a woman having her 100th year birthday. And I knew it because all of her friends were surrounding her, and she had 100, you know, 100, not 100 candles, but she had the number 100 on her cake. And she was complaining that she no longer could plant flowers, which was her passion. And she said, but, you know, I have an idea. For the next 5 years, she said, I bought myself a chair and a table, and I'm gonna convert from planting in the ground to planting in pots. And she was going on, and I got excited about planting flowers from just listening. I was reading my paper and just listening. And all of a sudden, her friends started complaining about, that seems like too much work, my back would hurt, you know, if I did that. And she says, oh, Mabel, to be 85 again. You know? So I don't want to hear any complaints tonight. You're never too young. You're never too old. So where do you want to make a contribution in this place called Earth that some have said won't be here in 100 years? Won't affect us, but will certainly affect our families to come. So where do you want to make a contribution? If you had to put the purpose of your life on a license plate, I call this a license plate test. You know, you only have 7 letters. You know, what would you put? I was driving the other day, and I saw a man. He looked like an IBM salesman, crew cut, white shirt, pens in his pocket. And his license plate said GEN.MGR, general manager. He had his job title on his license plate. And I thought, oh, my gosh, if you lose your job, you're going to have to get another license plate, right? Better have said leader, perhaps. So if you had to put the purpose of your life on a license plate, what would you say? What would you put? How about maybe think about your life in terms of a metaphor? My life is like A. What would you say? You know, these are not just mind games. As you start to think about your life in these ways relating to your purpose, you start to have new ideas. 8 years ago, when I left corporate America, I started thinking about my life as a lemonade stand on a hot, dry, summer, dusty day, and those who drink from my stand will go away having their thirst quenched. I know it's kind of silly. It changed my life. Because it changed a sense of what I needed to do. I have a sense of urgency about my life. When you get purpose in your life, you absolutely have a sense of urgency. You don't waste time. How about if you had to put the purpose of your life on a bumper sticker? What would you put? You know, I like to drive and look at people's bumper stickers because I think it, you know, kind of covers how they feel about their life. I was driving to a talk the other day, and I saw a woman, and her bumper sticker said, "Don't follow me, I'm lost too." And I turned quickly. But if you had to put the purpose of your life on your bumper sticker. So start to think about, where do you want to make a contribution? It's the opposite of looking for a job. A job is just an exchange of service for money. In the Renaissance period, we called that a gob. You did a piece of work for someone, and they gave you a piece of bread. You know, thanks to the French, they gave us the word career, which means fast track. And they gave us the word retire, which means to slow down, crawl under, and in my language, die. So the only people that retire, I think, are people who don't love what they do. When you find vocation, when you do what you love, there's never a reason to save for retirement or wait for retirement. You do what you love now. So purpose, what's the purpose of your life? When you figure it out, I got good news and I got bad news. Now, the good news is it'll change your life completely, change mine. The bad news is nobody's going to care. Even those that love you, I remember coming home to my family 8 years ago and said, hey, you guys, I figured out the purpose of my life. It's to be spirited, compelled, and passionate, enabling those who cross my path to make a difference. And they said, yeah, that's great. Can you throw out the garbage? You know, nobody's going to care except you, the most important, unique person in the world. So start to think tonight about where do you want to make a contribution? And make sure it's something that you really want. So it starts with purpose. As I go through what I call the 10 P's, it doesn't matter where you start, but best to start at the top. So where do you want to make a contribution? Where do you want to make, even if you're out looking for a, quote, job. Oh, I didn't finish my story. So a job is simply an exchange of money for service. That leads to a career, which is just the same, except it has a fancy title. And career leads to retirement, right? And retirement leads to death. Statistically, a little higher for men than women. I think it's 65% to 58% of men and women die within 10 years after they retire at 60. Now, you might think, that's 60. Well, guess what? We're living a lot longer these days if you haven't checked. If you're in good shape and taking care of yourself, chances are you'll live well into your 80s. You know, if this was 1900 and I was speaking to you, a lot of us wouldn't be here. The average lifespan was around 40, 44, 42, something like that. So think tonight, where do you want to make a contribution? Next, think about what I call prize, which is, what do you prize in your life? These are your values, right? What's most important to you and why? Think tonight, if you had to make a list of the top 3 to 5 things that are most important to you in your life, what would you write on a piece of paper? Now, once you've figured that out, and by the way, these should be things that you think are most important, not that, society thinks should be most important, or God forbid, your mother-in-law thinks should be most important. If your mother-in-law's values end up on your sheet, then you're in big trouble. You have to step back. Values, what do you prize most in your life? Once you make that list, ask yourself, what do I need to do each and every day that align to what's most important to me? And what would I have to do to not align to what's most important to me? I mean, it sounds simple, and it is, but it's actually not that simple. I mean, if you feel that family is number one, and yet you don't spend time with your family, you're not being true to your values. Most of us spend about 90% of our day doing things that are not important to us. And then we wonder why we go to sleep at night with that sort of empty feeling inside, like, is this all there is? You know, I did what society has expected, but is this all there is? So what's most important to you? And how do you know if you're following what's most important? Years ago, my son said to me, as I left corporate America about 8 years ago, and you know, like most of us, I was afraid to go out on my own and follow my bliss. I had a big mortgage and all these things, big family, and yet I knew I had to do this, but you know, I just couldn't quite do it. So I went from corporate America over to the next executive interview. And I had gone through 3 interviews for this big company. I won't tell you the name. It was a big 5 accounting firm. Started with a K, ended with a G, I think. And in the last interview, the managing partner said, Craig, you're going to love it here. And you know, when they say that, you have the job, right? And I said, why am I going to love it here? Because I knew it was the kind of job, again, that I leave on Monday and I come back on Friday, never see my family. And they said, you're going to love it here because we want our senior managers to always be home for anniversaries and birthdays. You know, and I saw my life just sort of being taken away. But I almost took that job. If it wasn't for one of my kids who said to me the day before, Dad, what's the use of making all this money if you're not here to spend it with us? Wow. And I stood up and I said, I'm sorry, I can't take this job. It doesn't align to what I prize most. Of course, then my leverage went up, but I didn't take it. So I ask you tonight to think about, what new goals, this is important, what new goals could you align around what's most important? What new goals could you align around what's most important to you? As you do that, think about it. You start to build a personal roadmap. You feel in control. You feel on the path towards an authentic life. So that's really important. So what do you prize most in your life? If you had to make a list of those top 3 to 5 things. So let's stay together here. So you have a sense of purpose, right? What do you want to make a contribution? That helps you figure out what's most important to you at a real deep psychological level. On the other hand, if you have no idea of purpose, but you get a sense of what's most important, you can kind of back into purpose. What's next? What's next is perspective. The way I feel about me is. How would you answer that question? The way I feel about me is. What you'll find is you have a lot of beliefs about yourself that are no longer useful after 40. With all due respect right now, probably many of your moms and dads are sitting right next to you, and you have their beliefs. We have beliefs we pick up from our parents, from society, from the period of time when we're born. But some of those beliefs as we age are no longer useful. So many of my clients, I have a private practice. I work all over the world with people via Skype and webcam, by the way, which is a whole new phenomenon for me because I get to look at people. And what's interesting, what I've learned is so many adults, 40s and 50s and 60s, and I have some 7-year-old clients, know exactly what they want to do, but they can't move forward because they have beliefs that are no longer helpful to them. You know, my mom always said I couldn't do X. Is your mom alive? No, she's not. But I still can't move forward. So make a list. You know, the way I feel about myself is, and change those beliefs. Start to work on those beliefs that are no longer useful. A long time ago, because I'm almost 53, but, you know, in my senior year of high school, I was a cross-country champion here at Lowell High School in San Francisco. And I was running up the hill in the polo fields. Some of you may know the polo fields. And there's the tunnels there. And as I was coming into the last tunnel to come around the track, they had a track then, to win the race, I heard my old coach yell to me, "Come on, Craig, I know you can do it." After 40, it's really important, listen carefully, to surround yourself with people that are supportive of you, as opposed to people that are not supportive. We'll get into that in a little bit. So it's not just enough after 40 to have a healthy perspective of yourself. You really have to surround yourself with people that feel good about you too. Years later, I went to a flea market in Fremont. I like to collect black and white pictures of coffee shops because they kind of make me feel like it's a third place, a comfortable place to go and learn and reflect. I went into this tent, and there was a man selling pictures, and I saw the picture of the tunnel in the polo fields that I had run through 30 years ago. And I bought this picture. I had my 5-year-old with me at the time, and I told him the whole story, and he was so excited. He says, "Daddy, can I run with you through that tunnel someday?" First he said, "Are there monsters in there?" And I said, "No, no monsters." And one day we did run through that tunnel. When you have a healthy perspective of yourself, others want to come along for the ride, you see. You know that. You're around people who feel good. All of a sudden you feel good. You wish you were like them. Well, you can be like them. It starts with perspective. It's easier to have a healthy perspective about yourself when you have a sense of purpose and a sense of your values, if you follow the hierarchy here. Next is possibilities. I want you to think for a moment of if you had all the money in the world, if you had all the money in the world, what work could you do that could last you the rest of your life? You know, and we'll do an exercise in a little while. But for now, just think about if you had all the money in the world, what work do you really want to do? Now make a list and ask yourself what's possible. Well, I'd really like to work with animals. The following is possible for me to work with animals. The mind doesn't like a vacuum, so whatever you feed it, you guys know this, you're going to get the appropriate response. A lot of us focus on what we don't want, and we get more of what we don't want. Well, I certainly don't want a job like I had before, and before I know it, because that's what I knew how to do, I go back to the job I had before. Wrong approach. So start to think tonight around possibilities. What's possible for you in your vocational life? I had a fourth grade teacher. Her name was Mrs. Johnson. She was a big woman. Sutro Elementary School, by the way, in San Francisco, since we're in the city tonight. And I loved her, except when we came in the morning to class. She, in those days, they wore these long flowing dresses, and she used to hug every child as we came in the classroom. And we would, like, disappear into her dress, you know. "Get me out of here. Get me out of here." She would just hug, and I guess now they can't get away with that, but in those days, they did. And I loved her, and I says, I want to know why she loved to teach, because she just loved to teach. And her husband was Gus, and he was my bus driver in the Muni, and he loved to drive his bus. They just were very happy people. And I said one day to her when I was in fourth grade, I said, "Mrs. Johnson," and she said, "Yes, child." We all had the same first name in those days. "Mrs. Johnson, you seem like you really love to teach." She says, "Child, I do, because I look for the possibilities in each of my children." Little did she or I know at that time that, you know, almost 40 years later, that would end up in my model. So what's possible for you in your life? What's possible? Too many times we think of what? What's impossible, you know? And when we think of what's impossible, we come up with lots of reasons. Or our spouses will come up with lots of reasons for us. So what's possible for you? Now, if you have a sense of purpose and a sense of your values, and you feel good about yourself, you're ready to look at possibilities, right? Just want to point that out. Next is place, what I call place. What's your place in the world? What's your role in the world? Think for a moment, when you were a little girl or boy, what did you want to do when you grew up? Think for a moment. When you were 8 or 9 years old, you know, what did you want to do? And now I like you to think to yourself, now ask yourself, when I grow up, who do I want to be when I grow up? Remember, it's never too early, it's never too late. Better now after 40 to think about who versus what. Who you are versus what you do. It's hard to do. I mean, go to a party and have someone, you know, you meet someone and they say, so what do you do? And you want to give them a job title. Starting right now, don't do that anymore. Answer with who you are. Well, I'm a person who likes to fish, and I love children, and I color. And, I mean, they'll look at you like you're crazy, but who cares? Who are you? You know, when I left corporate America, I went and got an office in a big building that was owned by a bunch of lawyers, and a lawyer owned the building. And his name was a little Italian guy, small, fat Italian guy, wonderful man. His name was Joe. And he said, I signed the lease for the rent. And he said, by the way, what do you do? I said, I work with people over 40 to help them discover and do what they love. He could not stop laughing. Now, this was a week after leaving corporate America. So, you know, six-figure salary. My ego was a little shattered at this point. And he just kept laughing. And every time I saw this guy, he kept laughing. He just laughed when he saw me. I think he was worried about getting the rent. 4 years later, I moved out of this building as I was driving away. It's a true story. He runs after me. He's running. He's sweating. Joe, what's the matter? He says, you know, I've been meaning to ask you, real solemn, I've been meaning to ask you. I've been a lawyer for 40 years, and I hate it. Do you work with people like me? He said. You know, my first talk after corporate America was at a place called Harry's Hofbräu, roast beef sandwich place. Maybe you've been there in San Jose. A friend of mine said, Craig, we're having a job fair. We're having a job fair. We want you to come and speak to the big group at the job fair. And I said, great, I've already made it. 1 week, I was at Intel Corporation as executive for 20-plus years. 1 week removed from Intel, I got my first gig. Wasn't paid, of course, but I thought, you know, it'll be a couple hundred people. I should do it, right? So I come to this event, and you know it's a bad sign when you look at the tables and you see, like, the Army and the IRS and a few other, you know, and there's nobody there. So it's 6 o'clock. I'm supposed to present. I go in the big room. It's 5 to 6. I'm thinking, well, you know, they'll be here soon. My first book had just come out, PS for Perfect. There was a picture of me, and I mean, I was all ready. 6 o'clock, nobody's there. There must have been 200 chairs set up. All of a sudden, you got to get this visual. A little old lady, she must have been at least 85, maybe 90, comes walking in. Her pantyhose is falling down. She's eating a roast beef sandwich. She had a white blouse on, and, you know, it's dripping all over her shirt. It would be anybody's grandma. And she walks up to me and she says, Sonny, are you the speaker? I said, well, you know, I don't think I'm going to be doing that talk tonight. She says, no, you have to. I came to hear you. So I sat down and we had the greatest talk for about an hour, just two of us. And at the end, she said, you know, I just lost my husband of 40 years last week. And I needed to get out tonight. And your talk really, talking to me really, really cheered me up. And she gave me a kiss. And, you know, I thought to myself, I'm on my way. The reason I tell you that story is, listen carefully, when you decide to do what you love, you're not going to have a lot of support. You're really going to have to be a little bit selfish. After 40, you got to be selfish when you finally decide to do what you love. And your first gig, whatever it is, you might have your grandma there cheering you on. But if you give up at that point, just imagine, you know, what will happen. So I want you to think about that. Let's go back to place. What's your place in the world? So who do you want to be when you grow up? Who do you want to be? When clients come to me and they say, Craig, I have no idea where to start. I just know, I don't know what my purpose is. I don't know what my passion is. I just know I've been a doctor for 30 years and I'm burnt out. I just don't know where to start. I say, let's take a piece of paper. And you could do this on your own if you just remember this exercise. Take a piece of paper. On the left, put abilities. Now, what I mean by abilities is not skills, but abilities. What are you able to do if you were motivated to do it? So you make a list of things that you're able to do if you wanted to, abilities. And on the right, list your interest, things that you're really excited about. If I sent all of you to Barnes & Noble's right now for 2 hours, what part of the bookstore would you go to? And why? And you'll go to different parts of the bookstore during different parts of your life. Okay, so you make a list of abilities and interest, right? See which ones match. Where is the alignment? That's where you should start and nowhere else. After 40, it's better to be interested in something and then learn how to do it than to be good at something and no longer interested. Do you follow? So that's one place to start. Ability, you know, the alignment is of abilities and interests. Another way to think about it is, how many of you have had a job that was challenging, but you didn't know how to do it? Ever have a job like that? Anybody? How did that feel, ma'am?
Well, scary.
Yeah, and I would suggest over time you're going to get burned out, right? So whatever you're doing in terms of your vocation, don't take work that's challenging. You just don't have the skills. You know, there's no way that you're going to be able to do it. On the other hand, how many of you have ever had work, I have, that was not challenging? You felt like you had a lot of, you know, you had lots of skills, but the work is not challenging. Ever have a job like that? Anybody? And how, ma'am, how did that feel?
Awful.
Boring. Who cares? So you don't want work that is challenging and you don't know how to do it, and you don't want work that's not challenging and you know how to do it. Now, this third one you have to think about. How many of you have had work that wasn't challenging and you didn't know how to do it anyway? See, you have to think about that. For me, it would be working like at McDonald's, you know. If you put me and a 16-year-old together at McDonald's, I would be fired by the end of the first day because I'm not good at the cash register, and at this point in my life, it's not interesting. So don't take work that's not challenging and you don't know how to do it anyway. So what's left? What's left is matching high challenge and high skills for you. What work could you do for a lifetime that was challenging, but you knew how to do it? For example, I speak all over the world, and every time I speak, I can't fake it because it's a different audience. It's different personalities. It's a different night. It's a different time. I have to be on. It's so speaking to me is a challenge, but I happen to feel it fits me, right? So for you, what work aligns abilities and interest? High challenge, high skills. So that's one place to start, as you start to think about your place in the world. Once you figure out your place in the world, don't go ask permission of others to do it. Don't ask for approval. A lot of us love success based on the fact that others say that it's successful. Or we don't make the next step until we get approval that it's okay. And to find your place in the world in the second half of your life, you are done asking approval. You've put in your time. You put in 15, 20 years plus of working, raising a family. You've done it, baby. Your time, you've done what society expected. I'll give all certificates out after this meeting. Now is the time to wake up and live your life. If you've got money in the bank and you hate what you're doing, get rid of the money and start to build. After 40, we need more time than money to discover and do what we love. I'll get to the money part later. Okay, so place. What's your place in the world? Sense of contribution, purpose, sense of values, prize, perspective, how you feel about yourself, what's possible for you in your life, what's your place in the world. That leads to what I call position or attitude. Position or attitude. They're all P's, so you could remember. Position. What work could you do for a lifetime that would give you a great attitude? I want you to think about that. A lot of experts will say, well, you know, I'll just take your lousy job and just, you know, have a good attitude and it'll change. I don't buy into that. It's like putting a Band-Aid over your wound. What work could you do for a lifetime that you'd be really excited about? You know? Like I could just speak to you for 3 days straight, not even leave this mic. Because I can't, you know, for me, I can't tell the difference between work and play. What would that be for you? People ask me, Craig, how much do you work? You seem like you work a lot. I say, I don't know how to answer that question any longer. At Intel, I could have answered that question. I could have told you when my sabbatical was and what my vacation was. But now asking me how often I work, it's like asking me how often do I breathe, you know? So think about what work could you do for a lifetime that would give you a really great attitude? I was driving over the Bay Bridge not too long ago, and as I drove across the bridge, I put my hand out to give the guy in the toll booth my money, and he started to talk to me. And I throw my brakes, and there are people behind me, and I said, because he asked me, like, what are you going to do to have a good day? I mean, he asked me an open-ended question. And he says, excuse me, I'm doing PhD research, and I'm just curious. And people are honking. You seem like you love what you do. I'm thinking, this must be the worst job in the world. He says, this is not a job. This is a mission. And the mission of my life is to make sure that in the tens, he had it down, in the, I think he said, 6 seconds that someone hands me money, I try to influence them to have a great day. I thought, wow. And I tell you that story. So what work could you do that would just give you such a great attitude, a good feeling? So that's position. Next is my favorite, is passion. In 2001, I trademarked a term I called vocational passion. And I'll tell you what that is. You go to sleep on Sunday night, and you can't wait to get up on Monday. You toss and turn all night long, and you think, is it time to get up yet? And finally, you just get up because you can't stand it anymore. Now, you have a lot of work to do on Monday, but you love every minute of it. That's the difference. Monday is your best day of the week, and Friday's the worst because you have to wait until Monday to continue, you see. I don't like these Fourth of July. I like the holidays with my family, but I really don't like the holidays because no one's around. I have to wait until Monday to work, to work with people. I went to the post office last year around Thanksgiving, and I said, it was a Wednesday, Thanksgiving, I think it was Thursday. I said, will my package get to where it was going on Friday? And the lady said, it will not. Friday's a holiday, and quite frankly, it's a vacation day. It's the only one I've had in a long time. And I said, if you did what you love, then every day would be a vocation and a vacation. And, I learned later, you don't say that at a post office. wasn't a good idea, but I was serious. Vocational passion is where you do work that feels voluntary. When you do work that feels voluntary, yes, you'll get paid, but when it feels voluntary, it's the greatest feeling in the world. That's vocational passion. What does vocation mean? It means to call. So I ask you tonight to think about what work calls you. What work pulls you in the direction that you're really excited about? That's the difference between vocation and just a job. Under 40, a job can be important. Hear me out. Can be important to build ego. But after 40, a job, a boss, unless you love what you do, is no longer useful. No longer useful. Vocational passion. You do work that just feels right to you. You could do it until you stop breathing. So what work could you do the rest of your life until you stop breathing? Don't think about the money aspect yet. We're not there yet. So passion. What are you passionate about? What do you get most excited about? Years ago, I was training to run the New York Marathon. I'm a marathoner. And I went to New York City, and I was training in the morning. I was still in corporate America. And I finished my run in Central Park, and I'm going up to the Hilton Hotel to go get dressed for a long day of boring sales meetings. And I remember thinking to myself at the time, at the end of the day, I have one of those cocktail parties to go to, right, where people stand around and act like they're interested in each other. And you go back to your room and you check those really important emails until 2 in the morning, like, hey, boss, could I have next year off or something, And as I was going into the Hilton, I heard a guy singing at 6 in the morning. I've done it my way. I'm saying, who is singing at 6 in the morning? It was a street sweeper. I walked over to him. He had an orange jumpsuit on. His name was Mel. Sometimes I think if you love what you do, you should have a tag that says your name. And I said, excuse me, you seem like you love, and he almost hit me because I had a mask on because it was cold, but he was big and I was small. And I said, you seem like you love what you do. He says, this isn't a job, it's a mission. Notice how when people have vocation, they talk about their work in terms of a mission. This is a mission. I've been cleaning streets, and he proceeded to tell me the 4-block radius of streets that he was cleaning. I've been cleaning streets for 30 years, something like that, 25, 30 years, and my job in the morning is to make sure that people don't step on garbage. And I was like, wow. I went up to get to shower, and I was jealous of Mel. I said, I want what he has. So for you tonight, think about what are you passionate about? What do you really what really gets you excited? Later, you can figure out a way to make money at it, and we'll get to that in a moment. So that's passion. Next is the title of my first book, which I called Perfect Vocational Day. Here's the idea here. In fact, we could play a couple minutes. We could play a real quick exercise. Imagine, this will be a bonus for you tonight, I'm sure. This will get you smiling tonight. Imagine I just gave each of you $50 million, okay, after taxes, actually. So now finally I get some response. Okay, good. Now, let's meet back in 6 months, okay? Go have fun, but, bring some of the money back. Now, by the way, I'm assuming that most of you can make that last the rest of your life and, quote, not work. Is that true? I'm a college professor, and I did this exercise years ago with my students, and they said, excuse me. I said, what? That's not enough money. It used to be $20 million. So now I'm giving away, you know, $50 million. What do I care? So let's meet back in 6 months, okay? All right. Ah, welcome. It's December. Welcome back. Good to see everybody here at the Commonwealth Club. I want you to think for a moment, what did you do in the last 6 months now that you had $50 million bucks? Just think a minute. What did you do in the last 6 months? Some of you probably traveled. You paid off bills. I would guess that if you spend some time on this, you'll find in what you did in the last 6 months, there'll be some hidden things that kind of pop out that you really would love to do if you had unlimited funds. Now, let's assume you still have some of this money. Let's now together design a perfect day for the rest of your life. The pattern of a day. Sure, each day will be slightly different, but what would the pattern be? I spend hours with my clients on this because I think this is the best place to start. Is it the eighth P, which is perfect vocational day. So first start with, when would you get up in the morning on your perfect day? You could take a piece of paper and you could write in 2 hour increments. You know, say you want to get up at 8, 10, 12, 2, write all the times down the left side of the paper. Design your day like an artist who is going to, you know, figure out what they're going to paint. How would you design your perfect vocational day? When would you get up? Where would you go? And you have to be very specific. The mind can't tell the difference, you probably know this, between what's imagined and what's real when you think about the future. So you really have to put some thought into this. So when would you get up in the morning? What would you do? Where would you go? The cornerstone of this day is, what work would you do? Would you work by yourself? What kind of work would you do? Would you work with other people? Would you work at home? Would you work in a small office? What exactly would you do? Remember, you have unlimited funds now. And the idea is to design a day that gets you so excited. You say, wow, if I could just do this. And it's amazing what people come up with. I'll start with someone who's an accountant, not to pick on the accountants tonight, but they're an accountant. And I'll go through this exercise with them. And by the end, they want to own a farm in Iowa. And they figured out that's exactly what they want. So perfect vocational day. Who would you be with? Where would you live? See the difference between designing a perfect vocational day and looking for a job. It's completely opposite. Better to design your perfect vocational day, then you know what you're searching for. So you guys have thought about this briefly. Oh, I got bad news. I need to take the money away. It was the last talk. So I need to take all the 50 whatever money, give it back, give me all your money back. But I'll leave you with a vision, you see, of what you would have done with this money. So you go back and look through this perfect day, if you could just live it, and find patterns in the day where you could make a dollar. Where could you make a dollar? Either selling a product or a service from this perfect vocational day. You got it? Even if you end up getting a job for someone else, this creative exercise will help stimulate you to think about what exactly could you do. A guy in an audience once said to me, well, Craig, there's always someone not here tonight who's like this the whole night. And I'll say yes, and he's like, are you the guy that's going to help me decide, and you know, are you the guy that's going to show me how to discover and do what I love? Huh? You know, like it's my fault. But one of these guys did this in one of my talks, and he said, so I want to play golf all day long. What are you going to do with that, huh? And by the end, he was so excited. He was going to become a golf representative, you know, a golf club representative, and teach golf. And so in the end, his whole life changed to, you know, being around golf. So perfect vocational day. You get to design what would be perfect for you. And that leads to the ninth P, which I call present. Now, okay, what do you do now? You have a sense of purpose. You know, you'd really like to contribute in this area. You really know what your values are, prize. You feel good about your self-perspective. You really have a good sense of possibilities, right? You have a good attitude, position. You know your place in the world. You've designed your perfect vocational day. You know what your passion is. Okay, now what do I do, Craig? There's three reasons why most people don't live authentic lives, by the way, if you haven't figured this out. Money, relationship, and emotional kinds of things. So let me go through this quickly. You have to be, like my story with Joe, you have to be strong emotionally when you decide to live an authentic life and follow your path and follow your bliss and do what you love. So think about how you could be strong emotionally. We don't have time tonight to go into all the ways to do that, but you know, you have to be strong emotionally. You got to say to your significant other, listen, honey, I need to do this, and I hope you're with me, but I'm going to do it anyway. People will say, what, do you have to get a new team? Sometimes you do. But it means being strong emotionally. That's number one. Number two is relationship, which I just sort of touched on. I think one of the reasons that, you know, one out of every two marriages end in divorce is because people are growing at different levels. And what's really critical is you have to support each other's growth, even if you don't agree. So if you're in a relationship and the other person thinks it's a bunch of baloney, you fall in your bliss, you're going to have to get a new team. I'm sorry. There's no way else to explain it. Whether you're married 1 year, 20 years, 30 years, sometimes you have to work through that. I tell my college students, I don't know if I could say this in here, I say before, if you go on a first date, forget about the sex part. First, find out if they, you know, if they believe in your passion and your purpose. And if not, then dump them, you know, because it'll last longer. It's important. It's important. So think tonight about relationships. Relationships. You want to have people around you in life that support you. It's very, very important. Three is money. Let's spend a few minutes on money. Money. We all need it, right? Well, actually, wrong. A lot of us, there's a difference between need and want, by the way, when it comes to money. To follow an authentic life, it does take a lighter backpack. It does take a lighter backpack. What I found, by the way, that people that leave meaningless jobs to follow their bliss, and they go to work for somebody else, they could expect to earn about 25% less for the first 4 years, and then ultimately make more than they ever made before. This is based on my 7 years of research and working with people. So if you go do work that you really love, working for somebody else, you could expect to make about 25% less. Therefore, you should expect to change your lifestyle. There's always trade-offs. There's no shortcuts here. And if you want to be an entrepreneur, which I think everybody should be after 40, by the way, it's my personal bias, if you're going to be an entrepreneur after 40, this is kind of hard, but you should expect to make 50% less in the first 4 years than you made working for somebody else. So you got to adjust the lifestyle. You know, I'm not saying you have to do what I did, you know, going from $1 million house to, if you read my stories, living with my kids, you know, on the floor in a small apartment. But sometimes you got to do what you got to do. But you got to expect to have a lighter backpack. And that's if you want to become an entrepreneur. Money, back to money. There's really four categories of money. First category is, some of you have plenty of money and plenty of time. Raise your hand if that's true. No, don't you have to raise your hand. But if that's the case, there's no excuse right now, right, to try some things. Second category, a lot of money, not a lot of time. I had a woman in an audience once who stood up and said, you know, Craig, I'm dying. I have terminal cancer. And after hearing you speak, I decided all my life I've wanted to help, you know, kids read. I'm going to go do this. True story. I met her years later. She was in remission. She's doing fine. So plenty of money, not a lot of time. Maybe you're older. Maybe you're sick. Time to hold up, you know, hang up that shingle now. Third category, maybe the majority of this group is probably in this category. Not a lot of money, not a lot of time. So if you lost your job today, you have 6 months in the bank of salary, and that's it. So the point is there's different strategies based on where your money situation is. Last category, no money, no time. If I lose my job and I don't get X dollars next month, I'm in big trouble. So first, figure out where you're at. Think for a moment. If you lost your job tomorrow, and maybe you're in that situation now, if you are, I might congratulate you for being let out of job prison, but it's another whole topic. If you're out of work starting tomorrow, how long could, this is a math question, how long could you go before you had to make a dollar? So that means you got to think about how, you know, what resources could I tap into? Could I sell a second house? Could my spouse start to work? What are all the things that would really, could I dump my retirement, which I always think is a great idea right now? I mean, why would you save for death? I don't comprehend that, with all due respect. So what could you do to lengthen your time? Because after 40, you need more time than money to really follow your heart. And then how, once you start, say it's 6 months, you say to yourself, you know what, if I wasn't making any money starting tomorrow, I can go about 6 months. Okay, in 6 months, when you start to do what you love, how much do you need to make at that point? The lower the number, the better, by the way. I have mostly guys rather than women say, well, I need to make what I was making before, you know, $300,000. I said, you know, okay, but lower the number, the better. You know, 80 is better than 100, 60 is better than 80, 40 is better than 60. Maybe you move to a different area. I don't know what, I don't know, the strategies are different from each person. The point is, how long could you go before you had to make money? And once you start making money, doing what you love, how much do you have to make? Those questions are important along with which of the money categories do you fall into. Do you got it? Money is a very complicated topic. It's more complicated than sex. I mean, if you're working and you come in on Monday and you go to the water cooler or coffee or whatever it is these days, and your partner comes up to you, your worker, mate, whatever, and says, "So Craig, hey, how was your weekend? Did you go out this weekend?" You know, yeah, and you talk about your sex life, and it's like, that's okay. All right, I got to get back to the office. But if someone comes up to you and says, "Hey, how you doing?" and you say, "I just am getting so much joy out of my work. I just love what I do." They look at you like you're crazy. I don't know why. Misery loves company. And they walk away. I mean, it's better to talk about other things than the fact that you love your work. So money, relationship, emotional kinds of things are the things that hold people back. And you know, there's different strategies. If you're a software engineer and you're living paycheck to paycheck, I'm not going to suggest you quit your job. Say you're a software engineer, you love animals, and you're working in high tech. You have no money. What will I recommend? Get another software engineering job, but not in the high tech, but in the animal industry, so you're closer to people who like what you like. It's that simple. You know, many years in corporate America, I just felt like I was broken, you know. I would, in my older age, I would say to myself, what is really the meaning of all this? You know, what is the meaning of all this? And it turns out I wasn't broken. I just wasn't around the right people to do what I needed to do. The last P, I think, is most important, and then I'm going to take some questions. The last P is around giving yourself permission. How can you give yourself permission right now, this minute, today, tonight, to start to do what you love? You have to give yourself permission. No one else is going to do that for you. Certainly not your spouse, because your family is too invested in you already. In fact, it's probably a threat if you come home tonight and say, you know, I heard this guy talking. I really need to follow my bliss. They're going to get a little upset with you. Blame me. Have them call me. Happens all the time. So you have to give yourself permission. You also have to build up a strong support network. Think about right now, what do you really love the most? And then build a support network up on three levels. Find a half a dozen people that you could connect with on a weekly basis that are just interested in what you're interested in. Because when you hang around people who have the same interests, you just feel like you're not broken, you see. How do you find those people? They could be dead. You could read about them. You could join a Yahoo group. You can go to meetings. You can come to meetings like this. Go to meetings. Hang out with people who share your interests. All that will do is make you feel like you're not broken. Okay, that's the first level of support. The second level of support is find people who are not just interested, but they're supportive of you. They give you ideas. They give you networking ideas. So find about three people that you can connect with on a regular basis that share your passions. They'll give you ideas. And the last level is just find somebody who could be a mentor. Could be a coach. Could be somebody living or dead. Find somebody who you really aspire to, that you could work with. In midlife, we really have to build new support teams, because we find that the support teams of the past just don't work any longer. But most of all, you got to look for those defining moments in your life when you just say, you know what, this happened for a reason, and I'm not going to take it anymore. I don't usually tell the story, but I'll wait till as I wrap up. I'll have a story for you. I want to just pause. We have another 15, 20 minutes. I want to see if there's any questions. We could do some 30-second makeovers. Questions, comments, observations for just a couple minutes from anybody in the audience.
Our thanks to Craig Nathanson for his comments here today. I'm John Milford, a member of the club's Grown-Ups Forum, and I'll be moderating today's question and answer period. Craig, you have time for questions?
I do.
Okay. And I'd like to invite those with questions. Candice, would you pass the microphone, please, so the listening audience can hear the questions and the answers? All right. We have one right over here.
You talk about networks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Your power elite right? The people who help you. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering why you think that is such a critical part of this project.
Mm-hmm. You mean the project of your life, why is it important to network? Is that the question?
Yeah.
The essence is when you're around people that share your interests, you feel like you're in harmony. You feel like you have a support network. Too many people, I've found, work in jobs that, you know, maybe they want to be a teacher and they're a software engineer, and they feel like, wow, I feel broken. Why are my performance reviews so bad? Why do I feel so empty? Better teachers should. You want to be a teacher, hang around teachers. You want to be a therapist, hang around therapists. Don't hang around software engineers. You know, my point is networking, I think, is important only to the extent of just having a place to go to get some support. I mean, there's nothing very deep there other than I think it's very useful. Thank you. Other questions? Such a quiet audience. Maybe you guys are all following your passion. Okay, here we go. One brave soul.
It seems like a lot of what you're talking about takes a lot of courage for people. And how would you inspire people to get that courage?
Do you say courage?
Courage, yeah.
I think it takes integrity. I think. How would I inspire? You know, I really can't. I find that the people who are interested in my work have either they're over 40. They've had a divorce, a financial financial crisis, an illness, a layoff. For them to say, "Wow, this is a time for me to really kind of reflect on my life." How do you get that before? I don't know. I think it's difficult. My hope is that many of you in here will start to move towards doing work you love before the crisis. But it's very hard unless you've had exceptional parents or you've. In my case, I was always a introverted thinker. You know, I spent my whole life sort of getting to know myself. So actually, that's the shorter answer: is the more self-aware you can become. Then I think you can move on. But it's without that oomph to be more self-aware, short of a crisis, I don't know. It's very difficult. I don't know. Other questions, please? Yes.
When you're dealing with your clients in this regard, do mm-hmm. you find that there's a psychological shift? For example, somebody mm-hmm. may think that they have a passion for gardening, mm-hmm. then they start gardening and realize all they really wanted were 3 potted plants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. I find that most of us have lots of passions. And what I try to encourage people to do is draw, the Olympic rings, draw a bunch of circles with a bunch of your passions, and then here's the interesting creative exercises. See how you connect the dots. It may be that you're somewhat interested in planting pots and planting flowers, but you're also interested in painting. So how do you combine painting and planting flowers? Or how do you combine, you love eating and you want to open up a delicatessen, but it seems like too much work. Well, how do you, you start to draw circles and connections with your, a brain synapse is when you think of one thought, you can't help to not think of another thought. So I think thinking about how to combine your passions is very important. So, yeah, usually the first passion that someone comes up with, I think, that's probably not it. But we just keep working and working and working it. Yes. Any other questions before I wrap? Such a quiet audience. Yes, sir.
In a time of crisis, what would you suggest for someone who's kind of shrinking and closing, closing down?
To some extent, the question is, when you're under crisis and you're really, really down, what do you do? Nothing, actually. I mean, seriously, I think that's the best time to do nothing. It's called the liminal state. You're betwixt and between. You knew what you did before, and you were kind of comfortable. Maybe you didn't like it. But you don't know what's coming, so it's a very scary place to be in. During that time, reflect. I mean, I suggest a couple weeks at least of doing just nothing but just walking around and thinking about yourself and some of the things I've talked about tonight. Too many times, I just published an article last week, and in the article I discussed I was in Starbucks the other day, and all I see is lots of people, with all due respect, over 40, just frantically, there was one man, he was on the phone, and I heard him say, "I'll take anything at this point." And in the corner, there was a woman, and she was doing a crossword puzzle. And it was interesting because she seemed so different from everybody else. And I walked by her, and I said, "Excuse me, that looks pretty hard." She goes, "Well, I'm out of work, but I find when I do crossword puzzles, it improves my creativity around what I should do next." And I thought, perfect. So I think under crisis, when I say do nothing, I mean don't take action, but decide just to do some – some self-awareness. I mean, take the time to learn about you. No one from HR is going to run up to you on Monday and offer you an authentic life. It's not going to happen. You know, that was a good question. When I wrap up, I'll give you a story around that. Yes.
I've been out here many years from Michigan, but there have been or were hundreds of thousands of workers for GM. And I don't know if they thought of every day as a challenge, but they enjoyed retiring after 30 years in their 50s, 100% health care the rest of their life for themselves and their family, and a pretty stable job up until recently.
Yeah.
Now they're hurting now. But I think that many of them, however, while they didn't feel it's a challenge, they took pride in their work. I think Studs Terkel mentioned that of a builder who said, I put that hoist and that whatever in there, and I created part of that building. But I don't know if every day was a challenge or not.
I found in my research that work is critical as long as we're alive. Whether you make money or not, the nature of work is critical to our sense of self as we age. And so, you know, I don't like to see people sit around at Del Webb community centers and talk about the past. I'd rather see those people engage with new activities. So the sense of work. I actually, based on some new research I'm doing, I think in about 20 years the new hiring emphasis will be on 7-year-olds. Because 7-year-olds, recruiting strategies for 7-year-olds in about 20 years. So it's, some of us could look forward to that. Seriously, in terms of the way the demographics are shifting, yes.
Well, it sounds like, I agree with what you're saying, and I'm sort of in that mode right now, but I think it's a process, and so how much of a plan do you put in place? I mean, if you're sort of following this, and it's going along, you're trying to be open to what, you know, possibilities, and you're sort of figuring it out, but everybody around you is saying, well, what's your business plan, or how are you going to get there, and you start to feel that old corporate thing. How much of a plan do you put in place?
I think the plan to have an authentic life is the most important plan you'll ever have. I mean, I actually tell people, set up a desk and call it my, you know, Me Incorporated, My Authentic Life Incorporated. And every morning you get up and you look at your master task list, which hopefully relates to what's most important to you, which relates to your most important goals. And you make sure that somewhere in your busy day you're spending a lot of time on whatever that stepping stone is to the next thing. So I think the plan for an authentic life is actually something that needs to be a plan with actually, you know, action. As opposed to just, well, I'll just kind of see how it goes. So I think it has to be an actual plan. I think it's important. Before I wrap, any other questions?
We'd like to remind our listening audience, this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you are listening to Don't Just Retire and Die with Craig Nathanson.
Final question? Yes.
Wrap?
I would just like to wrap up with a personal story. I don't tell this too often, but I think for this group I will. About 6 years ago, I was driving home from a college class. And, you know, I had left my wallet at home, my gas cards, everything. I was the typical absent-minded professor, my cell phone. My three kids are at home waiting for me. I'm driving home. And as I was driving home, all of a sudden, I got a little depressed. And for me, you know, I'm a pretty positive person, but something just came over me. At the time, my dad had killed himself, committed suicide, and I'd left corporate America, and I went through divorce, child custody, bankruptcy, cancer scare, house foreclosure. I had a son in drug treatment. I think that was the top of the list. You get the idea. And I got just a little depressed. I felt my hands actually driving to the edge of the road for just what must have been a nanosecond. And I remember just this panic feeling, like, you know, what am I doing? Later on, I reflected that I had made a decision to live. Than to not at that point. I said to myself, who will teach my future classes? Who will give these talks? Who will send money to my daughter in college when she calls? How about a future love? Who will be there for me? And I made the decision to not just live, but to really live. And so I tell you that because for me, that was my defining moment that gives me a sense of urgency about my work. Hopefully, you'll never have any of those things happen to you. But when something like that happens, or just an empty feeling when you go to sleep at night and you feel like, God, is this all there is? You take action and you do something about it, okay? So listen, I just want to say thank you so much. It was my pleasure to be back in the city where I was born and raised. And please visit me online at thevocationalcoach.com. I have many products and coaching products, and I work with people all over the world. I would love to work with some of you. And have a great evening, and know that I'm always cheering for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig Nathanson, for your comments here tonight. We also thank our audience here as well as the audience listening to the recording. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 106th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.